good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, right smack dab in the middle of your work week, September the 5th, 2018, 17 minutes past the hour. You're tuned into the Now program. I'm Scott Spears, along with you for the ride over the next 2 hours. Now, today, if you have a radio or listening device in front of you, here is just a word of warning. Tear the knob off your radio, put your listening device down, because you are going to want to stay parked here for the next 2 hours. Now, coming up next hour, we're going to be joined by one of our regular guests. She was a panelist on the McLaughlin Group and also a writer, reporter for the Daily Beast, Eleanor Clift, who's going to catch us up on everything going on in Washington and around the world. Eleanor Clift in hour number two today. Now, in hour number one, he was supposed to be with us yesterday, but he has an open door invitation to be with us any day. And any day he is on this program, it is a better day. He is one of the great actors of our time. He has mastered all three mediums in which an actor can work. He has done stage work with the play Old Calcutta. He has done television. You probably remember him best as Walter Finley on the hit TV series Maude. And he has done movies with Steve Martin, such as The Jerk, and Analyze This with Robert De Niro. He is great. He's 96 years young, and he is one of my favorite people on this planet. He is Bill Macy. Before we get to Bill, though, every time we have Bill on, we like to play for the audience this great theme song that is stuck in people's memory, classic.
Lady Godiva was a freedom rider. She didn't care if the whole world would. Joan of Arc with the Lord to guide her. She was a sister who really could. Isadora was the first bra burner, and you're glad she showed up.
Oh, yeah!
And when the country was falling apart, Betsy Ross got it all sold up.
And then there's Maud.
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 And then there's Maud. That uncompromising, enterprising, anything but tranquilizing.
And then there's one of my favorite people. God'll get you for that, Walter. Bill Macy. Bill, how are you?
After listening to what your introduction was, I've never felt better.
Bill, you're in your 96th year. It's a beautiful time of year. How's life?
Now listen to this. I'm going to start your audience off with some imaginative ideas that Samantha, my wife, and I have come up with. Is that okay with you?
You go right ahead.
I had an idea, because I can't get work. People think I'm old, and so therefore they don't hire me for anything, you know. I said to Samantha, why don't we hire a cameraman who have a portable camera with him, and let him follow me around from the minute I get up from bed, shower, brush my teeth, get dressed, have a little snack in the room when I'm having right now. You can hear me chewing the grapes that my wife put out for me. Get in the car. The cameraman is going to be following me. He can do whatever he wants to do with his camera. He can, et cetera, et cetera. And then I go back to the end of the day, and I go to lie down to go to sleep, and Samantha puts drops in my eyes, puts some hemp oil under my tongue, and says, good night, sweetheart, I love you. And I say, I love you back. What do you think of that idea? I would like your audience's response.
Well, Bill, my opinion of that is it would be great, because the one thing we know about you is you are unpredictable. And what would happen in the course of a day could be tremendous.
It would also be vulgar.
Oh, it would be.
Yeah, because I use all kinds of naughty words when I go to the casino, because there's a bunch of guys, there are very few women. And I sort of like whatever comes out of my mouth is stimulated by what's happening on the in the table and the people and so on and so forth. I'm from Brooklyn originally.
Now, what was it like growing up in Brooklyn?
Well, we didn't know any better.
It was just.
Do I get a smile on that one?
Now, you were there in
you
the.
You grew up there with my mother and father and brother and two. Oh, wait a minute. Let me interrupt that. My father tried to run a tailor shop and he make clothing and this and that. He couldn't do it. He's 90. He committed suicide because he had cancer of the throat. One night he couldn't breathe. He pulled out the thing that they put in for him to breathe, and he died in the bathroom. And we were Jewish family, and we hired a hearse, I guess, and with one car behind, and we went to the cemetery. So, and the cemetery was in Long Island, and we lived in Brooklyn. And we were feeding onto Long Island Expressway and going towards the cemetery. To the right, another funeral entourage bled into our... anyway, we ended up in a Catholic cemetery. We fell out of the car laughing our behinds off. Woo! And the two drivers looked at us with stricken faces at this insane family.
Well, you know, I think you have to liven up funerals a little bit. I think in this country, they're a little too maudlin.
Well, I hope my funeral is going to be lively.
Oh, you have it? Do you have it planned?
Do I what?
Do you have your funeral planned?
Yes, here's how it goes. When I reach 100, or it'll be 99 and a half, I call the Oscar people. In the SAG-AFTRA union, and I say I'd like to talk to the audience on my 100th, and but with one provision that behind me and on the lectern or the speaker, where when you look out of the audience, you know, and we'll watch everybody in the world will watch it on TV. Behind me, there has to be that what do you call it when people have passed.
In memoriam.
In memoriam, yeah. I want the in memoriam behind me with my credits or whatever I did. Also, in case I die, you know. I just want it there. And my wife's, and I said I'm going to drop dead while I'm talking. And my wife said she wants a front row seat.
Well,
so I have to go another 4 years before I can do that.
Well, that's good, because we'll have four more years of radio programs before this event takes place. Now,
but it's a good thing you're young.
Yes. I'll be here, for the next 4 years, as far as I know.
Yeah.
Now,
I have one criticism of you. I was holding the phone waiting for you to talk to me, and in the meantime I was listening to the background in your office, in your studio, wherever you're doing your work.
Yes.
I hated the music.
Oh, no. The theme song to this show?
Not to my show, but to what you had on prior to introducing me.
Oh, the theme song to this show.
No, it was just awful. I'm allergic to bad music.
Now, what was the problem with it? Because maybe we can fix it.
It's noisy.
Oh, it was too loud.
It's really not music. You want to hear music?
Yeah, I want to hear music.
The stars are going to twinkle and shine this evening about 8:45. My loving arms are going to tenderly twine about you. About 8:45. I promise I won't be late, 'cause at 8:30, I'm gonna hurry there. I'll be waiting where the lane begins, waiting for you on needles and pins, and then the world is gonna be mine this evening. How about a quarter to nine? And Scott,
oh, that was good,
you're
Bill.
Such a gentleman to let me go through the whole thing like that.
Well,
I love you.
You know what I was thinking about there, Bill, because I'm thinking about this work issue. And you might have a camera follow you around, but maybe you should get a theater out there and just perform music that comes to your mind in a 90-minute show. See, I think that would go over.
Yeah, that sounds like work.
It's fun. It would be fun. It'd be fun for the audience.
You want to be my producer? Come on.
Yes, I'll come right out there and we'll produce this thing because you've got funny showbiz stories that would be of interest to people, I'm sure.
Perhaps, but you know, I have no idea because I don't rehearse my material is impromptu. You know, it comes out of my brain and mouth simultaneously.
Well, that's good. That's improv. I think it'll be a good improv show.
Yeah.
That'd be less work for a producer.
But I don't want people to pay to listen to my drivel. Oh, you want to hear something that's interesting? I thought was interesting, and it's a true story.
Go right ahead.
Are you there?
I'm here.
You heard what I just asked you, right?
Yes.
Okay. About 3 or 4 or 5 months ago, I don't know exactly when, I got pneumonia, maybe somebody sneezed and the bug went into my brain, into my mouth. And anyway, I ended up in Cedars-Sinai Hospital with pneumonia. And eventually, after waiting in the hall, they wheeled me into a room. And it was just a room, and they had a drip on my arm and so on, and they gave me drugs and so on. About the third or fourth day, I don't remember which day it was, I was visited. I'm serious. I'm telling your audience this is a true story. My mother and father and two sisters, my brother never showed up, that son of a gun. They were lower than the bed, as if they were in some lower crypt of sorts. My father, my mother, my two sisters, and my father waved his hand out at me and he said, "Billy, come on, we love you. Come join us." I just looked and had no comment, but I never saw him look as handsome and without any worried marks on his face. My mother looked gorgeous. She looked younger than she had ever looked. My two sisters were simply darling, and they disappeared after a while. And I don't know, I can't verify if my eyes were open, if my eyes were closed, if it was a dream, but I was as clear as I'm talking to you right now.
Now, did the people in the hospital have an explanation for this?
I never told anybody except you.
Oh, you just kept it away from them. Well, this is good because that makes me feel comfortable because we all want to go somewhere when this life is over. And revisit.
Well, I'm going to go into the urn. My wife has just bought an urn because her brother is in one in the closet, and she wants to put me next to it.
So you have an urn ready for you.
Well, Samantha, are you going to burn me up again? She's in the other room, maybe finishing off her showering.
No.
Boy, I wish your audience could come and visit. We live in a little house, 1,800 square feet, the most darling little enclave in the world. It's like I'm sitting at the dining room table, and there's a little living room next to us, and it's quiet, and there's the kitchen right next to us. It's like heaven on earth.
Mm. Well, I'm glad. You know, Bill, I'm glad to hear this. Now, this brings up an interesting question, because we had this question from a listener not too long ago, and maybe you can answer this.
What is it?
It has to do with death. Now,
It has to do with what?
It has to do with death.
I don't hear that word.
Dying. Death.
Oh, death. D-E-A-T-H?
D-E-A-T-H.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Because, you know, at 96, sometimes I don't hear as well as I would like to. Anyway, go ahead. The question has to do with death.
Now, the story was the lady lives here in Ohio, and she's getting on in years. Now, her daughter lives in Oregon, but her parents are buried in Florida. Now, there's a...
Yeah,
it's all over the place. So what happened was she had always planned, the lady who lives here, when she dies, to be buried with her family in Florida because there's a spot there. But her but her daughter came to her and said, "Mom, I don't want you to be buried in Florida. I want you to be buried in Oregon. That way I can come visit the gravesite."
And I hear you.
Yeah, so this is a problem for this woman. How would she solve this without being cremated? Because she didn't want to be cremated.
I don't know. If you're asking me, I don't know how she's going to resolve that.
What would you do if you were faced with that issue?
I have no idea. I'm not even going to give you an answer. I can't think of how I would answer that.
It's complicated. I think that's why somebody wrote in and asked it. I don't think there's any good answer.
No. Listen to this, but I'll tell you what, this kind of talk is stimulating me to tell you about how crazy my family was. And you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay, my sister Pauline, she was older than me, and she was married to Nathan Beckoff. He was a dentist. He died. And when they bury you in Florida, because they lived in Florida eventually, they have a very shallow grave. They don't put gravestones. It's almost like plaques on the ground, you know, because the water level underneath it prevents it from having like normal earthen stones and stuff like that. So one day I was visiting, and my sister Pauline said, "Billy, let's go to visit Nat at his in the cemetery." And I said, "Of course, let's go and say, we'll pay our respects." Well, we were walking in the cemetery looking for Nathan Beckoff. We couldn't find his plaque that said that he was buried at this place. My sister, Pauline, who'd got her own family reputation, so I'm going to take the phone away from my mouth a little bit. Here's what she did. She said, "Nat! Nat, where are you?" And that's the family I grew up with.
Oh. Did you ever find Nat that day?
I have no idea. I don't remember. You know, I'll tell you, you know, it's a pleasure to be invited to talk to you on your show because I'm the most Bill there ever was when I talk to you because you give me, I would almost use the word license, so you give me permissions and so on. Because even if I weren't talking to you, I would be the same way without speaking on the radio. I get in the car, I meet people, I use vulgarity, I don't use vulgarity. I'm very friendly, I tell friendly jokes to different people, to total strangers and so on. But this is, if I sat on myself and said, "Bill," I said to myself, "Stop that, let's be normal, like a normal person and so on." Did you hear me just say what I just said?
I did.
That's boring. I'd be bored to death.
Bored
I don't want to be bore myself and then bore others. So I just run off at the mouth like an idiot or whatever because...
No, that's good. I like it, Bill. And here's what I'm interested in. Now, we know that years ago, when you went to the casino, you still go, but years ago,
I go daily. I'm going to go right after you finish talking to me.
Well, here we go. So now, years ago, there was a trouble that I remember you telling me about.
What was that?
Sneezing in the casino.
What?
That you would get thrown out.
Yeah, but that girl that threw me out, that woman... I haven't seen her for 5 or 6 months. Maybe she died, I hope. or maybe she's on a long holiday. But I haven't seen her. Her name is Patty. And I was sneezed once. She threw me out. And then she threw me out. A couple of girls said I used profanity. Go home. And then a couple of other times she threw me out for aberrations and so on and so forth. I'm glad she's not there anymore.
But
I still can't carry on too much. Because they just don't want an interruption, like a boil, a pimple, and so on and so forth. So, I try to get away with whatever I can get away with.
But Bill, how could this woman blame you for sneezing? That's an involuntary thing.
No. You can't be serious in your question, Scott. Come on, She runs the show, and she was the floor manager. And so when I sneezed loudly, you know, so she said, "Go home." You know, she's not even going to question it, and I didn't question it.
She didn't have any sense of humor in this at all.
No. You know, she was a worker. But I don't know if she's alive or dead, or she's on holiday or not. But the next time we speak, and I hope it'll be before I die, that I'll give you an answer to maybe she's going to come back, maybe not.
Was she kind when she asked you to leave that day? Did she say?
Yeah, businesslike, very businesslike.
Oh,
go business-like. Home, Bill.
Oh, good. Well, at least she was businesslike. But, you know, it's interesting. You bring up a point here. You say you've been thrown out of the casino for using profanity. And I was reading a story the other day, I believe it's in Florida again somewhere, where they have outlawed using profanity, and you can be fined for using profanity.
I'm not going to go visit that place.
No, I don't think they can do that. I don't know how they get away with this.
I'm not even going to go near that place, because I use profanity regularly, because I grew up... Wait a minute, Scott!
Yes.
Don't you know how they teach the little kids in Brooklyn the alphabet?
How do they do that?
F and A! F and B, F and C.
Now, did your parents use a lot of profanity, Bill?
Never.
Never.
My parents were beautiful, normal, struggling people. My father tried his best to take care of the family. And my mother was darling, did her best to take care of the family. There was, unfortunately... There was stress because there was no money. My sister supported the family with $12 a week as a secretary someplace. And I, as a boy, my father would tell stories like he grew up in New York. He was born in New York, and he grew up on the Lower East Side, and he had a fight with fists, the Irish and the Italians. So the Jews and the Irish and the Italians, he told me they fought every day. 9, 10, 12-year-old, they'd meet somebody, and they would just hit each other, you know. So anyway, my father was feisty, and one day, I was maybe 14 or 15, and we were in this Horn and Hardart cafeteria in New York City, in Manhattan. We took the subway and bus to get there, and we stopped in for breakfast. I sat at the table. I was a rookie in looking at the world at that moment, and my father says, "Sit down, I'm going to get some oatmeal." So he went to the counter, and suddenly there was a noise, and I looked up, and my father and this guy was at it because it was arguing over whose oatmeal it was. And I don't remember too much exactly about what happened then, but my father brought this bowl of oatmeal to the table and said this to me, "Billy! Billy! Did you see me hit him, Billy? Did you see me hit him?" My father was 75 at the time. That's the kind of I'm his offspring.
Well, he was a feisty guy. Now have you ever been feisty in that way, Bill?
No, only verbally.
Just verbally.
It's like I'm on your program. You know, Scott, you have no... I don't know if you understand, Scott. I don't know if I want to use the word honor, but when you call and say that you would like to have me talk to your audience, my God, I do a preparatory, I get the phone's got to be ready, the breakfast has got to be ready, everything is, it's my pleasure, it's like you're my favorite.
Oh, well, you're my favorite too, Bill. I got to change the music, though. I'm working on that. I'm going to change the music for you. Because the music's got to go. You know, Bill, you might have a whole second career here in music.
No.
Why not? I think it would work.
No. It sounds like work. I don't want to work.
So you don't...
With this, what I'm doing with you, it's like family-friendly.
Yes.
And so that's where I'm at. When I leave here, I get in the car, it's out in front of the house. I have a certain way of going because my vision is faulty. I had the eye doctor just saw him about 10 days ago, and he said, the pressure is still the same. You can drive. I can't really see print, and I can't read. But I'm able to see big vehicles and people walking and the lights and so on and so forth. And I get into my memory, I take certain streets, make left turn here, right turn here, and so on and so on. And I get to the casino. I go to three casinos a day. I go to the Hustler Casino in the city of Gardena. That takes me an hour and a half, by the way, because I don't take the freeways, because listening to the radio on 1070 and your radio dial, there's tragic accidents continually, because there's a lot of people that are going rapidly that they're not in control of their vehicles. And then I spend 2 hours there from 10:30 to 12:30. Then I get into the car and I go to the bicycle casino, which is Bell Garden. And then I play 2 hours there, and then I get into the car and I go to the Hollywood Park Casino for 2 hours. That's the closest to my house, but it only takes an hour to get home from that place, and I leave that casino around 4:30. Because nobody's asking me to go to work, so I made my own work. And I don't play for big money. I just pal around, play a little poker, and that's what I'm waiting for the guy to come and say, hey, get into the grave. Come on, you talk too much.
No. So, Bill, if I came out to California to visit, you would take me around to the casinos.
Oh, you'd love it. You'd love it.
Oh, see, I would enjoy this because I would not know the lay of the land out there, so I'd have to travel.
But also, I'll give you $500, just cash, and we'll break it into 20s, so you'll have a lot of money. Like $500, it's only $5, but if you break it into 10s and 20s, then you can sit down at a table, and I can sit next to you, and we'll make a bet, $10, $15, $20. It could last you maybe an hour and a half. Then we get up and we get in, and you'll see the people that I play with. They're all marvelous people. I have no idea. I don't speak to them privately as I'm talking to you, and I have no idea. I know that they love to win, like everybody loves to win, and so... It's an activity. What are you supposed to do? I'm not a writer, and I don't think I can have a radio show like you do, because people would want to hear this drivel continually. By the way, I have to do it 24/7. I live with myself 24/7.
You have to, of course. No, I think you could do a radio show.
I don't want to.
I'll give you my theme song.
Let me hear it.
the one you don't like. I'll release that to you.
No, I didn't say I didn't like your theme song.
It was too loud.
Was happening when you said I'll be back in 60 seconds, and in the background I heard some sort of sound, but it was a whole sound that whoever played it in your radio station, it was just terrible. Just hate that kind of continual interruption of what we're talking about.
Now, Bill, stay with me here. I'm going to play. I'm going to make sure this is the right song. That I've got it queued up now. Is this the song you don't like? Now tell me, and I'll shut it down as soon as it's the song you don't like. Because here's the theme song.
You may as well shut it down right now.
That's the one you don't like.
Well, the point is, it's too much noise.
Should I get a song where somebody's singing,
I'll sing. I'll sing something for you.
Go right ahead.
In other words, what's the name of your station?
WWGH.
WWGH.
That's it.
WWGH. So, if you want a theme song without any music behind it, and you press the button, and this sound comes out. Hello, listeners.
in Marion. This is Scott, your host. WWGH. God gives you the best. So listen and listen and listen some more. Scott will give you what you need to score. Here is his guest today's. Hello, hello, hello. That's something stupid.
No,
like
no, that's good. Well, no, because the mod theme song, you know, it told you exactly what you were going to see. You know, then there's mod.
Oh,
that was
okay.
A good theme song. You know, Bill, you strike me as the type of guy who likes to get reaction from people.
Who likes to what?
To get reactions from people.
Oh, well, I don't do it consciously, but I do get a reaction every time I open my mouth.
Well, here's an idea I have. Do you know any Christmas songs?
Any Christmas songs?
Yeah. Do you know any, like, Christmas carols?
We wish you a Merry Christmas. That's about it.
Okay, that's good. Here's what you do today. When you go into the casino on September 5th, just start...
September 5th, that's today, yeah?
Yeah, September 5th, when you walk in there, just start singing a Christmas song.
And then what?
And then just wait and see what people do.
They'll think I'm crazy.
Well, but they might say something.
No, I'm not going to do it.
Well...
I'm not going to do it.
I tried.
I'm not going to do it because I don't understand it.
Well, I think...
But I behave. I'm a normal person like everybody else. If I didn't open my mouth, they just see a person walk in and he says, give me my initials, BG or PITA. Those are my initials, and then they call out the initials. You know what PITA stands for, don't you?
No, PITA. What's that?
Pain in the ass.
Oh, is that what it is? I didn't know. Well, now, here's something, Bill. When you're out at the casinos, do you have anything to eat while you're there?
Do I have any what?
Do you have any food while you're there? Do you eat?
Oh, the food is generally inedible. I mean, of course you eat because you get hungry when you're sitting at the table. But you got to be very, very careful because... I have no idea what's going on in their kitchen because there's thousands of people at these casinos. So the kitchen most likely has got hundreds of people working. And basically at the Hustler, the first thing I order there is a spinach and tofu broth. It's like a big bowl of spinach that had been cooked and tofu, which is a bean thing, and I like that to start my breakfast day. That's my breakfast when I get to that. And maybe in the afternoon I would have a Cobb salad. It's edible, but I don't have anything like their steaks and chickens and heavy things like that. I just don't want to have it because my wife says don't eat those foods because if you want to eat any kind of meats, you have to get organic food, organic fed, and she buys lamb chops for me that are organic. She gets them from New Zealand and so on. And so I live a very, it's sort of like, your audience most likely saying, gee, how dull that Bill is in terms of how he gets along from morning, noon, and night. But listen, it's my dullness, so I'm happy with it.
That's exactly right, Bill.
I broke myself up with that one.
No, that's good. And Bill, here, I remember years ago, recently, I think you told us that you used to bring B. Arthur pastrami.
What? Say that again?
Yeah, I think you told us that you used to bring B. Arthur pastrami sandwiches.
Oh, wait a minute. How can I express this? There's a restaurant in downtown L.A. in the business section called Langer's, L-A-N-G-E-R-S. Been there maybe 50, 60 years. Well, if you had a pastrami sandwich from them, you're in, it's bliss and heaven. So occasionally, I'll meet one of the dealers and I'll say, you want a pastrami? And she said, bring one tomorrow. What time do you go to work? She said, 11 o'clock. I said, okay, you got it. I go out of my way. I live in Beverly Hills, and I go to downtown L.A., and I stop at 7th Street and Alvarado, A-L-V-A-R-O-D-O, Alvarado. And I park in front, because I don't get out of the car because the traffic is brutal. And I made a phone call. I order a pastrami to go. It's on rye and pickles and mustard and so on and so forth. They bring it out, and I give them $20. It's $18.75. I said, keep the change. And I get in the car, and I open it up briefly. And I eat, without eating the bread, the one half of the pastrami. It is like, it's pure heaven. And I get to the casino, and I give the young dealer, the female dealer, the other half. And they look at me and say, oh, thanks, Bill. And so that's the pastrami story.
Now, what is on a pastrami sandwich? How do you order it?
Just a pastrami on rye.
Pastrami on rye.
And they put mustard on the bread.
Now, do the dealers enjoy this? Have you ever met anybody who didn't like pastrami?
No. And also, they think that they eat pastrami when they get it someplace else. It's not like, there's all kinds of pastrami. This guy, this Mr. Langer, he orders it from some great place, and they have, I would say, approximately maybe four or five counter guys with knives, not machines, slicing the pastrami. It's almost like an army. They have to feed an army because the public stands outside the door. They want to get in. They have to get some of that pastrami. They just they slice and slice. Each slice is maybe between a quarter and a half inch thick.
Now, how much does this pastrami sandwich cost?
$18.75.
Now, do you get any like side dishes with it?
No, I just get a pickle.
Well, that's awful nice of you, Bill. I hope these people at the casino appreciate that.
Oh, no. I don't talk to them about price or anything like that. We talk about the delectability of having a piece of pastrami in your mouth and chewing it and swallowing it, and then it disappears. And the next time is when we talk to Scott Spears on the radio about pastrami.
Absolutely. Well, when you're at the casino, what's the conversation at the tables when you're?
Oh, it's the most boring.
It's boring.
I'm not going to hurt your audience. It's vulgar, and they laugh, and there's a bunch of Asians. There's Chinese. There's Koreans. There's South Koreans mostly, not as many North Koreans, and there's Cambodians, and Laos, and a couple of Jews from Brooklyn maybe. And a lot of people from Los Angeles. It's a big mixture. And the age group, you can't get in unless you're 21. And, oh, listen to this. You asked me a question about the casino. They have these buses. I'm in the living room in my house. I'm in the dining room, rather. And I'm looking at a wall that maybe 30 feet, 40 feet away. The bus would be about 40 or 50 feet long, and they bring three or four buses a day to the casinos, and in the buses are Koreans that they pick up at Koreatown and other places similar, and they give each person, and basically they're all elderly, like at least 60 and above, they give them a $25 coupon to play gamble with, and they get off the bus, gray-haired ladies, gray-haired men. They shuffle and hurry in to the casino because that's their activity at the moment. And there's hundreds of those people in a certain section of the casino that use the coupons to play with because the casino owner, it's like he's like a shill because when they lose the coupons and they don't want to sit around and not wait for the bus to take them home, so they have to dig in and bring in their own money. So that's how he's planned it out, or whoever has planned it out. It's sort of naughty, in my opinion. But anyway, the people have to stay alive. I understand that. They get on the bus, they get off the bus, they play cards a little bit, they go home, and the chatter. You think I'm chattering? My God, you should hear 50 to 80 people all chattering in Korean language or some other language. My God, it's like you want. I play poker in a completely different part of the casino, where you could hear a pin drop. Oh, the news. Oh no, I say, Jerry, turn down music, please. That's terrible music. He says, you're from another era, so the music is for today. You should play cards and shut it. Shut your mouth. That's the way they talk to you.
Oh, Bill, I wonder, because Maude is in reruns and The Jerk is certainly on a lot, how often do people come up to you in the casino or in your daily life and say, can I have an autograph? Can I get a picture with you? How often does that happen?
Never.
Never?
Never.
Well, that's...
They may say something verbally, but they never ask for an autograph or a picture or anything like that.
Do those cameras like TMZ, do those people follow you around?
No.
They should. You'd be much more entertaining.
No. This program that you have, Scott.
Yes.
Is your program, and you asked me to come on as your guest, and this is an isolated moment in the history of the planet.
That's true.
When I'm off, when I hang up and you say you've got to go back to work, it's an isolated moment what we're doing here. The only ones that are getting the benefit of this moment with you is the audience in Marion.
That's true, but I think that's good.
And I leave the house, I'm just like a normal person, and I get and park the car, give the... walk to the casino. They said, hey, Bill, they're friendly in that guard. And I sit down at the table and play some cards, and they talk drivel. There's nothing ever... It's people waiting to die. Essentially, the bottom line is, what are you going to do? Well, you can't get up and do nothing. You have to do something.
That's true. Now, you know somebody else who's in your age category, Bill, who's still around, is Norman Lear. When's the last time...
That son of a gun. I'm. Don't. Let's not talk about that guy, because he infuriates me. He gave me the job, of course, but he took the money.
He took the money.
The residuals. I said this on the Gilbert Gottfried podcast. He invited me on September 11th. I would love your audience to hear that one. Norman Lear is not a normal person. He's a greedy person. So when I signed my contract with him, I don't know where my agent was, and I don't know where I was. I was a rookie, even though I was 50 years old. He said, in case it goes to syndication, I didn't know what he was talking about. I'll give you the first year residuals. I didn't know what that was. And then after that, I'll take the residuals. Well, Maude went off the air in 1978, and I got residuals for till 1979. Since 1980, which is 38 years, he gets the residuals every time they replay Maude on any station. And he doesn't. And he's a billionaire because he had a bunch of other shows, and he never once picked up the phone and said, Bill, how you fix for? So anyway, I don't particularly like him. Some people came by recently and said, there's an idea for a show here. You want me to call Norman and have him do the producing? I said, no, I don't want to have to. You know, it's just like, it's personal there. You know, the government took two, should I tell that on your ear? Do you want to hear that story?
Go right ahead.
The lawyer that I met out here in 72 said, you're making good money, so let's do a thing called deferred tax. I had no idea what he was talking about. But I said, okay, let's do it. So when they, I paid tax on yearly tax. I didn't pay it as you would normally pay it. I sort of paid less. But at the age of 72, the government said, now give us the, what you deferred. So from when I'm now 96, so between 72 and 92, I had saved a lot of money, and I run off at the mouth, but I don't run off at the pocketbook, so we put the money in the bank. I accumulated $2 million, and the government took it. They said it was deferred. They took $100,000 a year for 20 years. Now, I get $2,000 a year from the government as a pension. And so I live on that. And the car, the gasoline for the car, I don't know how the hell I even... Oh, my wife, she's really the one who supports me. I'm speaking quietly now because I don't want to hear me give her... I don't want to talk too much about what she does. She's the darling of my life. If it wasn't for her, I'd be in a cemetery long ago.
Well, then we pay her a lot of respect, Bill, because we're glad you're not in the cemetery. We're glad you're here with us. But, you know, the joke's on the government and Norman Lear because you're still alive at 96.
Yeah. I hope he lives another 10 years because he'll then suffer.
Well, you know...
And also, I tell you what they're doing with my money. They took... it's the way the government runs. Every street that you go through in California, in Los Angeles, in Beverly Hills, is made up of men in orange and yellow uniforms and cones. They're always repairing the streets. It's continual. And so my money is helping the rest of society drive with less bumps on the road.
Well, that's good. At least it went for a cause that was needed.
Yeah, right. So I don't regret anything. In fact, as long as I'm alive, and, you know, when I talk to you, you're the only person in the world, Scott, who permits me to run off at the mouth and doesn't say, hey, shut up already.
No, I love it because you have a unique take on life, you have a unique voice, which is perfect for radio, and your personality is gregarious, and you can't ask for anything more. So you are always welcome, and I...
What does gregarious mean?
happy and outgoing, and I never know what's coming next, and people listening...
I don't either. Listen to this. Samantha gave me a mantra recently.
Oh.
And I'll tell it to you. It goes like this. I'm happy. I'm sound. Oh, shucks. Gosh. God, that's terrible to be 96.
I'm happy. I'm strong.
Come here, Sam.
Yeah.
Tell that Scott.
Yeah.
Tell him.
I'm happy. I'm strong. I'm confident. And I'm friendly.
Well, that's a good mantra to have.
So listen, I try to be happy. I think I've been happy in the strange way of happiness. And strong, well, you know, how strong can a Jew be? And confident, again, it has to do with brain definition and so on. Friendly, I've always been friendly. I walk up to total strangers in the street. If I take a look at them, sir... Oh, wait a minute. Did I ever tell you my story in Spanish about the... Scott, did I ever speak to you in Spanish on the radio?
Not that I recall, no.
Would you want to hear a story I tell to a Spanish person? I walk up to them and say, Habla Español, señor? Do you speak Spanish? You want to hear that? Do you have any Spanish people in your neighborhood?
Yes. Go right ahead with this.
Okay. Because this is the friendly part of me. Señor, I'm going to say it in Spanish and then I'm going to repeat it in English to say so the English speaking people will understand what I said in Spanish. Yo quiero practicar español con usted con su permiso. I would like to practice Spanish with you with your permission. And they usually say, go ahead. And then I say, un día, this is the story that I'm practicing. Un día, una mujer vieja dice a un hombre viejo en la casa con gente viejo también, ella dice, señor, yo puedo adivinar tu edad.
Bah, loco, imposible.
The lady, old lady, walks over to this old guy in his old age home, and she says, sir, do you know I could guess your age? And he says, get away, it's just impossible, you know. And she repeats it, and she says, you know, it's verdad, I'm able to do that. So finally, he wants to get away from her, and he says, okay, ¿cuántos años? What's my age? And she says, no. Primera, baja los pantalones. First, you have to drop your pants. And he says, ay, you're crazy, loco. Baja los pantalones, yo puedo adivinar tu edad. Drop your pants, and I'll tell you your age. And he looks around, nobody's there. He drops his pants. ¿Cuántos años? Well, how old am I? And she says, no. Segunda, baja los calzones también. No. Second, you have to also drop your shorts. He says, ah, loco, imposible, loco. She says, baja los calzones, I mean, drop your pants. A puedo adivinar tu edad. He looks around, there's nobody there. He drops his shorts, and he says, ¿cuántos? And she says, no. And she, ella agarra su huevo. She grabs him by the testicles, and he goes, and then she says, 95, 95. And he says, no, how is it possible? ¿Cómo posible? And she says, me lo dijiste ayer. You told me yesterday.
Bill, God love you. I always love you having you on the show, and I hope you come back every time we call.
Oh, please invite me. I love you.
God, Bill, have a great day at the casino, and we will talk again soon.
Thank you, and God bless your audience for listening.
Stay well, Bill.
Bye-bye.
If your name, business, organization, church, or your favorite charity mentioned or announced during our broadcast,